Welcome to the Private Investment Podcast brought to you by Limited Partners Club. We bring together private sector investors to tackle subjects like wealth creation, capital preservation, and legacy. We hope you enjoy.
Hey everybody, Coburn Shepik here from Limited Partners Club. I hope you're having a fantastic week. In today's meeting, we're going to be talking about private equity offering structures, what some of the differences are, what some of the terms are, how things are structured. So this will be a pretty exciting high-level conversation around what to look out for and how to understand the differences between different types of structures. So going into private investments are much different, obviously, than buying and selling shares off of an exchange like this in the stock market. So we're going to be diving into some of the topics we're going to cover are funds versus syndications and what that means and what to look out for and what to understand between those two types of offerings. How a partnership works and its legal structure, some of the terms you should be aware of and have an understanding of, how payouts are issued and what some of the fees are in these private offerings. So the purpose of this really is to have an understanding of the different types of offering structures. And if you are new to the private investment world, this would be a great listen and watch for you, regardless of if you're involved or not, having an understanding of how these pieces come together and intersect with your investment goals. Hopefully this is enlightening. So let's dive into it. And we'll start with funds versus syndications. So if you're watching, we have a screen right here showing the different structures, but it comes down to this. Funds are pooled investments into one sort of umbrella, if you would. Syndications are direct to the deal. So funds are multiple assets that are pooled, and syndications are direct to the specific deal. So as an example, a fund, a multifamily investment fund or a commercial real estate investment fund would be, if you were getting involved on the passive investment side, typically in most cases, there would be a strategy for that fund. It might be value add multifamily in these specific markets in this specific risk profile. And there might be five of them or 10 of them or however many assets or how big that fund plans to be. And all those are pooled together under one investment vehicle. Versus a syndication, on the other hand, you would still have a specific strategy. You might even have a specific asset that you would invest. You would have a specific asset that you would be investing in. So it'd be an address, the actual deal. You can walk the property. And the differences between these two from a fundamental standpoint is, and this sort of comes back to what's important to you. And there's a great benefit to syndications or a deal by deal structure because of the level of control, right? So people are biased, investors are biased towards certain markets, certain assets, and a lot of different things. And so having the ability in a syndication to invest directly into that specific deal can be very beneficial versus a fund, which is also beneficial for a lot of reasons. And I'll get into that in a second. But a fund, on the other hand, is sort of this unknown vehicle that's going to raise funds, go out and acquire or invest in these certain type of assets over the lifetime of that fund. Now, there's different structures within funds. We won't get too far into that, but there is open-ended funds where investors can buy and sell shares throughout the lifetime of that fund, or there's a closed-ended fund, meaning there's a lockout period for that lifetime of the fund. Once the fund matures, That's the end of that investment. But the benefits to investing in a fund or this pooled vehicle is diversification, meaning that your investment is within multiple different assets, potentially across multiple different markets, which can be a good thing as well. And another potential benefit to a fund, investing into a fund, and it really depends on its structure, is there could be a level of liquidity if it's an open-ended fund, where the level of liquidity can be greater than direct into a syndication. Now, regardless of how these two sit and how they're structured and how they work, they both are structured from a partnership and somewhat of a legal perspective in the same way. So that'll lead me to my next topic, which is, just to back up for a second, which is the partnership agreement between the investor and the operating team or the sponsorship team. Both syndications and funds have a similar partnership structure, and we'll get more into that here in a few. So just high level, just to recap some of the differences and the pros and cons to funds versus syndication. One is the risk profile, right? And this is based on one's perception of diversification and having direct access to a specific deal. Some investors, a lot of people prefer the ability to have an address to be able to analyze that specific investment rather than a strategy. And so in a fund model, you are really, in really any model, but more on a fund model, you are investing in the jockey to execute this plan, versus in a syndication, you get to see the specific investment, you get to see more of the details. If it's a piece of real estate, we can walk it, go visit it. So the risk profile is different. And again, it's based on the investor's perception. Also, the level of liquidity and that goes back to the risk profile. So the level of liquidity is definitely different in certain funds as well as syndications. The level of control, and control is an important term, obviously, when it comes to making private investments. And when you have the ability to invest direct into a specific opportunity in a syndication, there potentially could be a greater level of control, meaning because you can do more research upfront and due diligence and structuring that specific opportunity rather than a sponsor or an operating group going out and making certain investments on their own terms. Flexibility is another one, and I'll relate that to liquidity, but flexibility, there is potentially some more flexibility in a fund type of model. Depending on its structure, there could be, a greater level of liquidity. There's more properties involved if we're talking about real estate. And lastly is diversification. So in a direct-to-deal syndication, that's the investment. In a nutshell, your eggs are all in that basket. Obviously, you can diversify your funds across multiple syndications, and that would give you the same level of diversification, but there would be more transactions. In a fund model, where there's multiple assets pooled, there is indeed more diversification, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing always, because if one investment in that fund underperforms, it ultimately drags down the performance of the entire fund altogether. So those are the biggest difference when choosing to allocate to a fund or a direct-to-deal syndication. So let's talk about the partnership and the legal structure a little bit. And again, these are the same. The legal structure and everything could be could look different because there's different layers. But at a high level of how this is structured, it is the same fundamentals in both the syndication and a fund model. There is two parties. There is the passive investors and the operator or the sponsor. The investors are legally called limited partners or LPs. The operators or the sponsor, who is overseeing the day-to-day, who sources the investment, who does all the active work in the partnership, is also known as the general partners or the GP. And those two partners form what's called a limited partnership, which is the partnership agreement. Limited partnership, also known as an LP. And the LP will create an entity. It could be an LLC, a limited liability company. And that holding entity is the owner of the specific investments, the specific properties. So individual investors or the equity investors are purchasing shares of that entity or that LLC that owns the specific asset. And that's high level how this partnership and structure works in both syndications, direct to deal, and in a fund model. Moving on here, some of the terms that are important, and there's a lot more, but this is high level, and some of the terms that we should be aware of when seeking some of these potential opportunities. What we're looking at, for one, is the maturity. How long is this investment? How long is capital going to be locked up for? Secondly, is capital contributions. This is very important. A lot of people don't recognize this, but there could be additional capital requirements, and this is called a capital call. If the fund, and this is where each deal is different, right? These terms are going to be laid different with every operator, every deal, every fund. And so aside from understanding the high level, the terms need to be reviewed and understood in each specific deal. As far as the capital contributions, again, there could be additional capital requirements through what's called a capital call in the case that the operator or sponsor needs more capital to fulfill that investment. So if plans don't go accordingly, for example, there could be a term in there that requires an additional capital requirement from their investors, which is important to be aware of, right? Secondly, we want to understand what the general partners or the operating team or the sponsors are, how much capital they're putting in, and where is that capital coming from? Or is it all syndicated equity from the passive investors? These are important things we want to know, of how much skin in the game does the operating team have. Next is roles and responsibilities. Who's responsible for what, right? What are the roles of the people involved, and who are these people? So aside from a great deal, aside from a great sponsor, who else is involved? Next is ownership shares, right? What are the splits? Is there truly an alignment of interest between both parties in the partnership? And lastly is voting rights. How much control do the passive investors have, if any? Who makes those decisions? And so these are some of the terms that are very important to have an understanding of. And when we are seeking private opportunities, we want preferred shares. We want preferred voting rights. If we can get a seat on the board, for example, and certain opportunities, that gives us more control of the opportunity and ultimately more control of the risk that lies in each of these specific opportunities. So these terms, and we've just talked about a high level few of them, are extremely important to understand. And next is, and finally is payouts, right? And so payouts are another thing that are, depending on which type of structure, funds, syndications, these high level fundamentals will be the same as far as how it's structured, but each specific deal is going to have a different method and different splits, and we'll get into that here. So the first payout method is what's called preferred returns. And that, in a nutshell, is basically if we were offering a 6% preferred return, the operating team, the general partners, do not make a dime on the deal until the preferred return is paid. So anything after the preferred return gets split. So the preferred return is the preferred cash that gets paid first to the investors. So in our 6% example, all the gains up until a 6 are paid first to the investors. And after the 6, there is what's called an equity waterfall. The equity waterfall is, or the split, is how the sponsors or the operating team gets paid. This is what's called a promoted interest or the sponsors promote. So back to our 6 example, paying out a 6% preferred return to the investors, anything from 6 to 10, for example, could have a 70-30 split. So 70% of that additional cash flow gets paid to the investors, 30% gets paid to the general partners. And you could have multiple levels to this waterfall, or what's called a hurdle. And usually a hurdle is based on the internal rate of return or the IRR. So it could be, for example, this, just listening to this is could be confusing. If you saw it on a spreadsheet, it'd be much different. But for example, back to our 6, you could have a 6% preferred return and a 70-30 split up until, say, a 15% IRR, and then the split changes after 15% IRR. So it could be 50-50 up from a 15 to an 18% IRR. Then after an 18% IRR, it could drop to 60-40 in the general partner's favor. So there can be multiple hurdles within the waterfall. And to understand how this works high level, the fundamentals of these terms obviously is important. And what's more important than having an understanding is being able to look at the specific, at a specific deal, understand the payouts, and make a decision based on what's in the market, what other operators are paying, what should be paid out to the limited partners, to be able to decide if there is alignment of interest in this deal. Is this split fairly? Is there too much in the operator's or the general partner's favor? Is the sponsor team taking a big enough cut? Why wouldn't they take a bigger cut? So all these questions are important ultimately to determine if truly there's an alignment interest in each particular deal. Some of the fees that are involved. Fees in any investment, there are fees. If you even in public markets, the companies, the brokers, the institutions make fees when you buy and sell assets. And in the private investment world, there is fees as well. And they're much different than in public markets. And in each particular deal with each particular operator, the fees are going to look different as well. And there could be a simple 1 to 2 fees within a deal, or there could be many fees. And so to understand high level what these types of fees are, and also individually doing the research on what you should expect in the type of opportunities that you're seeking, what other operators are doing, what other investors pay, et cetera. But high level, some of the fees here to understand, one is an administrative fee. And this is basically keeping the lights on. These are the fees that really keep the lights on. They keep the lights on for the operating team. Now, the operating team or the general partners do a lot, right? They source the deals. They finance. They put the debt in place. They are networking with brokers and partners and writing many, many NOIs and underwriting hundreds of deals, right, to close the select few that gets the assets to get closed on. And so absolutely sponsors and operating teams deserve these fees, but to have an understanding, make sure there's an alignment of interest and make sure they're paying what is comparable to other operating teams is important. So an administrative fee is simply to keep the lights on for this team, right? They have a team, people need to eat, people need to pay the bills. That's what this administrative fee helps. An acquisition fee is really a profitable line item in some cases. These all kind of help keep the lights on, but an acquisition fee is a percentage of the deal at acquisition. So at closing, just like a broker would in a real estate deal, make a commission, so would the operating team with an acquisition fee. Asset management fee is a recurring fee of managing that specific opportunity. So it's a cut out of the cash flow every year that asset's being held. And the last fee that we'll talk about is a disposition fee, which again, back to our acquisition example, a disposition fee is a part of the deal at closing. So once it's sold, just like a broker would, take a cut of that specific deal. Now, not all operators will have all these fees. Some might have all of these fees and more. But to understand what the fees are, what their purpose is, it's fair for operators to have these types of fees. It helps them pay themselves to do the job that they need to do to provide quality opportunities and a quality operating team. So these fees, if within the comparable market, are absolutely fair and should be paid to keep the lights on for these teams. So that's it in a nutshell on today's discussion on offering structures. I hope this kind of gave you shed some light on high level how private investments are structured, some of the things to look out for, and hopefully gave you an understanding of how, what types of structures interest you and why. So I want to, before we take off here, I want to invite you and share quickly on Limited Partners Club. If you're in the community already, I want to thank you. If you are not, I'd love to invite you in, as we are in early stages of building our community. So Limited Partners Club is a members only community for passive investors. And our mission is to create a space really that has not been created before, unless you're in an Ivy League place or have a really, really strong network of being in some high class societies. This group, this community, this club that we're creating is for everyday passive investors to come together with other people that share an alignment of interest, that share like-minded, that are sharing like-minded opportunities that they're focused on, real estate deals, private equity, potentially venture capital, everything related to private investing. We want to focus on diving into topics together in spaces like this, and hopefully in the near future, potentially in person. We do plan on doing some private dinners, but to tackle subjects around private investing, wealth creation, wealth preservation, and really have a space for people to come together and build a really quality network and ultimately hopefully do some deals together. So we have launched a space. We do have an online community. We do plan on doing some private dinners. And we also have this recurring meeting every week that we do together on the Zoom call. Some are longer than others. Today was a short one, but I'd love to invite you in. So completely free to join. We don't plan on having a paid version in the near future, at least, but we might have, you know, some paid dinners to, you know, keep the lights on for us. But it's free to join. So I'd love to invite you in. If you're interested in joining, or if you'd like to invite someone who you think would be a good fit for the community, go to limitedpartnersclub.com. That's limitedpartnersclub.com. My name is Coburn Shepik. I really appreciate your time today again, and we'll see you next time. Cheers.